All right, thank you. So I'm Nicholas, and I'm going to be talking about our paper, Control Flow Bending on the Effectiveness of Control Flow Integrity. So a little bit of background here. So memory corruption vulnerabilities have existed for 20 years now, and there have been no shortage of defenses really trying to stop these. But so far, basically all of them have failed. So in response to this, we've really gone back to the basics and looked at control flow integrity as a more principled defense at trying to prevent these memory corruption vulnerabilities. And the idea behind control flow integrity is that if we can manage to somehow restrict the program to some subset of the control flow graph, maybe if an attacker is able to actually obtain control of the execution of the program, they won't actually be able to do anything bad with it. And that's the hope. And sort of the main result of what I hope to convince you of is that control flow integrity really does not stop all attacks. Currently, we sort of see CFI as the gold standard. If only we could achieve this, we would stop everything. And so instead of looking at evaluating more secure CFI schemes, we're currently implementing more efficient CFI schemes. And really what I want to argue today is that CFI is not a perfect defense, and we really ought to be spending our effort trying to improve security instead of improve performance. So, control flow integrity. What is control flow integrity? Well, you can basically think of control flow integrity as placing restrictions on indirect branch locations. So there are basically two types of indirect branches. There are actually three, but you can think of them as being two. There's indirect calls and there are returns. And this sort of C syntax on the left, an indirect call can target really any instruction in memory, any address you want. And what CFI does is it places sort of an inline reference monitor, which checks the target of the indirect call and says, is this valid? And so it may say, all but three locations are valid and kill the other ones. Same thing for return instructions. We're going to check the address of the value on the stack and say, is the return instruction a valid place? If it's valid, then we'll allow it, otherwise we'll kill the other ones. So that's sort of half of CFI. The other half of CFI is the idea of a shadow stack. And with a shadow stack, what we do is we have a dynamic restrictions on instructions, on the values that we can return to. And what I mean by this is, imagine that we have three functions, A, B, and C. And we have a call from A to B. We had better make sure that the return from B goes back into A. Same thing if we have the call from C into B, we better make sure the return from B goes back into C. Notice that CFI will allow this too, but the difference occurs when we have something like this. Or imagine we had a call from A into B and a return from B back to C. With CFI, with just the policy of the control flow graph, this is allowed. Because there is a call from C into B, so the return from B to C must be valid. But with the shadow stack, we remove that. We say, if you call in from A to B, you better go back from B back to A. So that's sort of how CFI works. So that said, there are basically two ways that we can weaken CFI, one of which is we can coarsen the control flow graph, by which I mean allow more edges in the control flow graph than are actually needed, because of some over-approximation, because, wow, okay. Now I can see a lot of Macs, but not much else, okay. So you can coarsen the control flow graph, or we can remove the shadow stack. Shadow stacks have performance penalty, we might want to get rid of them. Now, prior work in CFI has done both of these things. It's coarsened the control flow graph and removed the shadow stack, and it's broken. There were a whole bunch of papers last year that showed that all of these schemes which do both of these things are broken. So don't do that. That's pretty clear. But the question is, what about other CFI variants? It's not clear that CFI is broken just because the weak implementations of it are. So we want to look at, in particular, two questions, one of which is, how secure is CFI if you implement the control flow graph piece as correctly as you can, but you take out the shadow stack? And secondly, how secure is CFI if you don't weaken anything, if you implement it to its most perfect thing you can imagine, how secure would CFI be? Are there still attacks? So towards that end, we're going to define fully precise static CFI as CFI in its best possible form. You can think of this as the policy on the control flow graph is the minimal policy which allows the program to function fully. Another way you can imagine doing this is you say a transfer from location X to location Y is allowed if and only if some benign execution makes that transfer. So every edge on the control flow graph has a witness which explains why that edge must exist. I'm going on a little bit about this because I want to make sure that you're very clear. The policy that I'm imagining is the strongest CFI policy you could ever do. Now, I'm not sure that how we could implement this policy. It may not be computable. But for now, let's just imagine that it existed and work on that assumption. What could we do as an attacker? So the first question I want to ask, how secure is half-weakened CFI where we've taken off the shadow stack, but we have the most precise control flow graph we could have? So you may ask, well, can we just do return-oriented programming? Previous attacks on CFI schemes have basically shown how you can do ROP in the presence of CFI. And we tried this, we tried pretty hard, and turns out we couldn't. Now, it doesn't mean you can't. Someone may be able to, but we tried relatively hard and we weren't able to. So what do we do then? Well, we're not going to give up. What we're going to try is maybe return into libc. So return into libc is a more basic technique. All we do is we return, is instead of injecting arbitrary gadgets that we're going to execute, we're just going to reuse existing functions, which are within the program, and hope that those functions give us enough power as an attacker to do anything we want. So when we have CFI in place, there are a couple of challenges for return into libc that aren't there when we don't have a shadow stack. Oh, sorry, when we don't have CFI. The first of them is we need to find a valid path in the control flow graph to some useful function, say, for example, system. So that we need to find this path in the control flow graph. It has to exist. The second challenge is we need to be able to divert control flow down this path. The path may exist, but it may not be feasible. We need to find a feasible path. And finally, at the end of this path, we need to be able to control the arguments to the system call to actually make it do something useful. So then we might have the question, what does a CFG look like? Well, here's an example of a control flow graph from some program where on the lower left, we have the point of the exploit. And on the upper right, we have a call to system. So the first thing to note is that in most complicated programs, there will exist some path, but it may be very long. This is sort of a hard thing to do. We would have to follow a whole bunch of conditionals to get to the target destination. Okay, so guess what? I lied. That was not a picture of an actual control flow graph. It looks something more like this, where there's a whole bunch of edges from a whole bunch of places. And the reason why is that we have functions like memcopy, where they're called in half, a third of every function that you have. And so there exists paths on the control flow graph that look something like this, where you just can go from the point of the exploit into memcopy, and then you follow another edge, and you end up at system in three edges. Okay, so that looks interesting. Is it feasible? Can you do that? So this path clearly exists, but we're doing something bizarre. We're going into memcopy on one edge and out on another edge. How can we even achieve this? Well, it's actually possible. Yes, you can do it. And in general, we call these functions dispatcher functions, analogous to dispatcher gadgets from jump-oriented programming. So imagine that we had a call to memcopy, and we as an attacker controlled its arguments. And on the right, I'm going to show you the stack, what the stack looks like. So imagine we execute memcopy, so we push a stack frame. And the stack frame really is going to have two different things. It's going to have the local data, the saved registers, arguments, those sorts of things. We don't care about that. But it's also going to have its return address. If we control the arguments to memcopy, then what we can do is we can say, well, this destination pointed on top of its own return address, and the source pointed on some attacker-controlled data. Now, what does this do? Well, it means that when we call memcopy, we can cause it to overwrite its own return address to make it return to an arbitrary address. And when I say arbitrary, I don't mean arbitrary in terms of now you can execute a ROP attack, because remember, we still have the CFI control flow graph policy in place. So when I say arbitrary, what I mean is that we can now return to any location which calls memcopy, which is a fairly large fraction of the control flow graph. So in general, what we call dispatcher functions are any function with three properties, the first of which it has to be commonly called. The more commonly it's called, the easier it's going to be to find an edge from the exploit point to the dispatcher function, and then from the dispatcher function to the interesting system library function. Next, we need to control the arguments to this useful function. And finally, the most restrictive part, it needs to be able to overwrite its own return address. So for example, a square root library function has the first two probably satisfied, but the last one is not. Square root cannot cause its own return address to be overwritten. Memcopy, though, can, as can printf and fputs, lots of other functions. Any function, basically, that has a write what where primitive built within it can write it over its own return address. Also, any function which calls a dispatcher function is itself a dispatcher function, because we can use the lower function on the call stack to overwrite the higher function's return address. So with this, we then return to the three challenges and ask, okay, how secure, how hard is it to actually do those things? So the first challenge was to find a path to system in the control flow graph. Well, we can do that. Especially, it makes it very easy when we have these dispatcher functions, because often it's very easy to find a path from wherever you are in the control flow graph to some call to some dispatcher function, and then from any dispatcher function to some useful library function like system. Diverting control flow, well, I've shown you how it's feasible, and the other edges turned out just to not be that hard. We only have a couple of them. So in the earlier example, there were only three edges we needed to make it follow. That was pretty easy. And finally, we need to control the arguments of the system. Well, it turns out if you just pick the right destination ahead of time, this is really easy to do. So you find all of the calls to system or exec or one of those, and pick the ones where you control the arguments, and then start from there. And this task becomes fairly easy. So what does this mean in practice? Well, what we did is we looked at six real-world binaries where we assumed that we had this strong CFI policy with no shadow stack in place. They're vulnerable binaries, so some vulnerability exists that has been disclosed. And what we did is we looked at how can we attack them? Can we recreate attacks assuming that fully precise static CFI in the strong sense existed? So we looked at these six. We did this all manually. And we found in three of the six cases, we could directly execute arbitrary code. So this was via call to exec or system or something like that. In two of the six cases, we could get arbitrary file system access, which often is as good as arbitrary code execution, because if we can overwrite your authorized keys file or your .pro file on Linux, you can just from there get arbitrary code execution. But interestingly, in one of the six cases, the attack was entirely prevented. And the reason why it was prevented here is the attack was an off by one error, which let us overwrite basically only one word in memory, and the word was a function pointer. And the function pointer, when CFI was in place, was constrained sufficiently so that we as an attacker could not make it do anything bad. The original attack could just stack pivot and then go from there as a ROP attack. But with CFI in place, that's no longer possible. So CFI seems to be able to prevent some of the time, but most of the time really does not provide too much value. So the first conclusion to draw from this is when you don't have a shadow stack, CFI is broken. Even if you have the most precise control flow graph you could possibly have. So call to everyone who ever implements another CFI scheme, please use a shadow stack. Saying 3% performance overhead is too much for us is not a good answer. If you don't do it, it's not secure. Okay, so next question, what about unweakened CFI? Let's put the shadow stack back in. So the first thing to note here is that this removes the dispatcher functions entirely. The whole concept of the dispatcher function was going in through one edge and out through the other. And that's exactly what shadow stack is designed to prevent against. So when we do this and add back the shadow stack to CFI, all of a sudden dispatcher functions go away. So that trick no longer works. So the control flow graph now really does look difficult. And we really do have to walk 10, 20, 30 edges in order to get something useful. So looking back at the challenges I addressed earlier, this one becomes pretty hard. Now, turns out in most programs, the control flow graph is connected. In most large programs, there is some way to reach some powerful system function, because eventually they're going to want to call it. So that's not the hard part. The hard part really is being able to divert control flow down the path. And so this takes a lot of manual effort. You think very hard. You look at it. You try a bunch of paths. Eventually, you hope you find something. And again, controlling the arguments, turns out if you just pick the destinations right, that's not too hard. So we ran the same evaluation. The same evaluation on the same six binaries. This time, we put the shadow stack back in and asked, what attacks can we do now? Are there still attacks left over? So here are the results this time. In one of the six cases, we can now execute arbitrary code. That's better than three. In the same two cases, we can still get arbitrary file system access. But this time, instead of being able to execute arbitrary code in the remaining cases, we can do what we call confined code execution in two of the six cases. And what we mean by confined code execution is we mean we can sort of do arbitrary computation within the current process, but we can't really escape the current process and execute arbitrary code on the machine. So we've secured it somehow. We've sort of sandboxed the issue to this one process. So we can replicate the sort of heartbleed style vulnerabilities within the current process, but we can't do much more than that. And then in the same one case, the attack was prevented. All right, so that's sort of one of the questions you might want to ask about. The other thing you might want to, might be interesting, the whole problem with returning to libc is we don't get Turing completeness. That's one of the big things that we like from ROP. ROP gives us Turing complete computation on memory, and returning to libc traditionally does not. So the question we asked is, can we still get the power of return-oriented programming, the Turing completeness, even if we don't do return-oriented programming because we have CFI in place? So we show that this is actually possible. We can get complete Turing complete computation on memory, even with fully precise static CFI along with a shadow stack. And the way we do this is with something which we call printf-oriented programming. And its name will become clear in a little bit. The basic idea is that printf is a Turing complete domain-specific language. So instead of having a program, we now have a format string. And instead of having a program counter, we have a format string counter, which says where in the format string we are. And now we'll all talk about the primitives. So for memory reads, we have %s, which lets us read an arbitrary value out of memory. And for memory writes, we have %n, which is the ever helpful to attacker tool, which lets us write to an arbitrary address the number of bytes written so far to the format string. So this lets us get arbitrary writes. For conditionals, we have a somewhat bizarre primitive, which is %.d, which if you pass it the right arguments, you can make it either print or not print a value according to whether or not the length specifier is zero or something big. And now the question is, what about loops? Well, the format specifier counter lives in memory, and we have memory writes. So when we reach the end of the format string, we just overwrite that value and say, go back to the beginning and loop again. So this is the way that this is sort of the intuition of why you should believe it's possible. The proof is in the paper. And what we do is we construct a compiler which lets us turn arbitrary Boolean circuits into printf statements. So this here is a ripple carry adder implemented as a single call to printf. And now you would never want to do this in practice, but it is possible to do. So really, we do get Turing complete computation with single calls to printf. And printf is not unique. There are almost certainly other functions which let us achieve similar power. We've shown that you can do very similar things with fputs. The only trick with fputs is you can't cause it to loop itself. So you need to find some loop in the control flow graph which calls fputs repeatedly. Other functions have very similar power. Anything which lets you achieve a conditional and a memory write and a read, along with a loop in the control flow graph, is sufficient to give you Turing complete computation on memory. So this is sort of bad for CFI. It's sort of a limit of CFI. CFI, no matter how strong it can be, cannot prevent Turing complete computation if it's within the specification of the program. Okay. So with that, let me give a couple of conclusions. So CFI with shadow stack does stop some attacks. In one of the six cases, it stopped it entirely. And in other cases, it reduced the power of the attacker from arbitrary code execution to something significantly weaker. In its best form, though, CFI cannot stop all attacks. CFI, as it is currently implemented, just can't stop all attacks. There's nothing you can do. Our scheme cannot be made any stronger in the traditional sense. We will need something more on top of it to make it somewhat stronger. Another conclusion, shadow stacks significantly complicate attacks. Again, I'm going to reiterate this. When we didn't have a shadow stack, it was very easy for us to mount our attacks in practice. When we did have a shadow stack, it took a whole lot of effort to go through these binaries and manually analyze them and try and find the attacks that we could do on them. And the final conclusion is on somewhat of a different note. Maybe it's a little bit controversial. But I'm going to claim that I think enforcing memory integrity is probably going to be more effective than enforcing control flow integrity. And the reason why is we've seen a bunch of defenses recently which have all tried to allow an attacker to gain control over the process, to be able to write arbitrary values in the memory out of context, and then hope that only later will we be able to, as defenders, stop the attacker from doing something bad with the value that they've overwritten in memory. And it really doesn't seem to be the case with this. It seems to be that once an attacker has controlled all of memory, sort of they get to control what your program does. There are fundamental limitations in what you can do with assuming the attacker has arbitrary control over memory. And so really I'm going to ask people to consider, how can we make memory, is it possible to make memory integrity sort of as nice as control flow integrity to implement in practice? And with that, I will now take any questions.
Questions for the speaker, please come up to the mic. I can't imagine that nobody has any questions. Great. Please state your name and affiliation.
Shuo Chen, Microsoft Research. So I wonder if you consider the effectiveness of CFI combined with ASLR.
Okay, so yeah, so CFI along with ASLR. ASLR really does not give you too much. ASLR just sort of, so the only thing we're using is the understanding of what the program has to be able to compute, right? Like shuffling, when I'm implementing an attack, I don't care about where things are in memory. So there's sort of two types of ASLR. There's the coarse-grained ASLR, which we have currently, which is everything shifts by an offset. That's sort of seen as easy to bypass. Then there are these research-level prototype fine-grained ASLR, which sort of shuffle instruction sequences around. And those only help against return-oriented programming, which rely on gadget sequences. We're relying on the fundamental features of these functions. So it doesn't matter how you implement your printf. If you implement it to spec, we have Turing completeness. So our attacks are sort of so strong ASLR that you could even rewrite the code. As long as you follow the spec, we still have our Turing complete attacks.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
I loved the talk, thanks. I'm Kevin Hamlin, UT Dallas. And my question is somewhat similar, but possibly generalizes the question of the previous questioner. So you make this case that even if you have the perfect CFI policy, you still need that shadow stack, and you have some experiments to back it up. But it feels like, in general, your metric is saying, if there exists a vulnerability, even with no other defenses at all deployed, then it's not secure. But what about layered defense, right? So suppose I have some extra protections, things like I'm going to length limit your format F strings, right?
Okay. Or,
you know, all sorts of things like this that we could deploy. Yeah. And then it's not as though CFI without shadow stack gives you nothing.
No, I agree. It definitely does not give you nothing. I mean, like, sorry for the double negatives, but yeah, CFI does give you something, and it's clear in the results that it gives you something. It took us from 6 attacks where we can do full ROP to 1 where we get arbitrary code execution. That's clearly not nothing. But addressing your other piece about sort of layered defenses, so the way I like to think about it, there's some quote, there are two types of programs. There are programs that are so simple they have no obvious flaws, and so complicated that they have, they obviously, oops, I messed this up. Sorry. There are programs which are so complicated where you can't reason about them and you can't find a flaw. And there are programs that are so simple where there's clearly no flaws. And I like to think about the similar thing with defenses. I like defenses where you can argue and say, no values will ever be used out of context. Done. End of story. Now show me that that's the case and you can argue security from there. The other way of doing it is going like the Microsoft IMET way, which is, well, let's just throw everything we know about making things harder at it, and hopefully something will stick. And so far, that hasn't worked. I mean, Microsoft IMET was broken 2 weeks after it was announced. The problem with trying to layer defenses on, if you can layer them on soundly, it works very nicely. If you can say, here's a defense which prevents an entire class of issues, that issue is done, now let's talk about some other class of issues, that's nice. But when you layer defenses on, like, let's length limit format strings, well, I can probably make shorter format strings. I could probably chain multiple format strings together. Like, there are all sorts of things that I could do, which if you give me a small restriction like that, I could work around. So I would very much like to see defenses which could argue perfect security against some small class of vulnerabilities, much more so than just here's a defense which we hope will solve some problems, but I don't know which problems those are yet. So that's sort of how I think about this space.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Great. Well, let's thank our speaker.